Okay, Rabbi, so let's continue. I want to discuss now with you the topic of praying to die. A morbid topic. A very morbid topic. Let me take out my notes. Spent time on this yesterday. Here we go. Okay, this week's parasha, we learn about Miriam. Miriam's mispalel, Moshe's mispalel for Miriam, Alna Tehila Kimes. One moment, please. Let me get my notes all together. All right, here it is. Now I'm all ready. Okay, let's look at the pasuk. At the end of Parashas Bahaloscha, what does it say in Parash Bahaloscha? At the end of the parasha, it says, Miriam is ill. Right, Hashem, Miriam speaks Lashon Hara, v'atadaber Miriam ba'aron b'moshe al oidos v'isha kushis asher lokach, ki isha kushis lokach, v'yomru, harak, ach, b'moshe diber Hashem, halegam banu diber, v'yishma Hashem. She spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu parish from isha? It's not fair what he did to his wife. And the pasuk goes on to say, v'yish Moshe ono v'yom yikol adam, okay, v'chulu v'chulu. At the end of the story, it says Moshe is misfal, the shortest prayer in the entire Torah. What is the shortest prayer? Al na sihi kames. Moshe Rabbeinu is misfal, Ribbono shel Olam, please heal her. Let her not be kames, like a dead body. Asher b'tzeisoi merechem imoy, who has come out of the womb of his mother. Whose half of his flesh has been consumed. It's not clear. You can hear me? All right, one moment. One moment. All right, how's it now?
All right.
It's better now?
Yes.
Okay. So we have over here the pasuk at the end of parash Baalayischa, it says, Al nasi kames asher b'tzeis melechem imo v'yechol chatzi b'saray. Moshe is mispal for Miriam. He says to Hashem that let her not be like a dead body, kames asher b'tzeis. Okay, how about now? Let's try again. Better now?
It goes on and goes off.
Is it better now? Let's see. Is it better now?
Better now. I don't know how long it's
left. All right, let's see. I tried something, another technique. Let's see now. Okay, if any second it goes out, let me know. Al na sihi, let it not be. It's no good? One second.
No.
One second. All right, how about now?
Do you have enough power on your phone?
Yes, I do. How about now? You hear me now? Okay, if it goes out, let me know. We'll try something else. Over here it says in the pasuk, Al nasi kerech, let it not be like.
In and out.
Okay, let me think what to do. Give me a second to figure this out. I'm gonna go back to the old way. One second. All right, how about now? How about now? Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Mr. Nyman, what do you say, Mr. Nyman? How does it sound now? One more time, Mr. Nyman, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Mayor, can you hear me? You hear me good? Okay, let's try like this. It says here in the pasuk, Al no asihi kirei eloi. One sec. It says here in the pasuk, Al nasi kirechimimoy, Moshe Rabbeinu was mispalel to Hashem that Miriam should be healed. And the pasuk he said over here is, Al nasi kimeis asher b'chavetzeis b'chavimimoy, that she should not be like a dead body who comes out of her mother's womb, who vayeochal chatzi, so half of the flesh of the person is no longer there. What does that mean exactly? What in the world is the pshat in this pasuk? Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to Hashem, let her be not like a dead body, like a human being who comes out of his mother's womb that is deformed, that half of the flesh is not present. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, "Anoti achisenu zo kimeis shaham mitzor chashav kimeis ma meis mitame bebia af mitzor mitame bebia asher betzeis merechemim." Rashi says, "Imenu ha yoloima ela shekina hakosav." Next Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi very quickly. Asher b'tzeisa mi'achas sheyotza zeh merechem imenu imoy shel zeh sheyesh koach b'yodo la'azor v'eino oizroi hari nechal chatzi b'saroi she'ochyoi b'saroi hu dover acher al noti kemeis imencha roifah b'tfilo mi'mas kriya mi'mitara. Alright. Rashi over here explains, Rashi gives some explanation. I came across a sefer that explains the pasuk and the pasuk as follows. This pasuk is a raya. Some want to suggest, this is not what it says in Rashi. Rashi has a much more elaborate interpretation, which we have to discuss another time. But there's a sefer from a Rishon that says, the Pshat in the Pasuk is that if a child, Rachmana Litzlan, comes out of his mother's womb, and the child is deformed, and does not stand a chance to have a normal life because of the incredible deformity of the child, the child will suffer. We have to also appreciate, we're going back over here in ancient times, when there was no technology and no modern medicine to go give a person a fighting chance. This person, this creature, will have a miserable, miserable life. So do you know what people would do? They would pray that they should die. And this pasuk here is coming to teach us indirectly, this is a shocking, shocking thing to say such a thing, is coming to teach something indirectly, that there is an approach, that if a person in this world, his life is not a life, he suffers to such an enormous degree, better dead than alive. That people should pray that he should die. So here is the pshat in the pasuk. Miriam over here is a mitzora. A mitzora, we don't appreciate the mitzora was an enormous state of suffering. All different types of suffering, psychological suffering, physical suffering. What we're not familiar wait, I got another problem now because I can't mute everyone because I made a mistake. Please bear with me for one more moment. I have to do something very important. Just stay with me one moment. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult. 1 second, please. All right. All right, let's continue. Al-Nati Kames, this pasuk is a raya. This pasuk is a proof that a person is allowed to pray that somebody should die. How is this a proof that someone should die? Because the pasuk is saying that let not Miriam be like a kimes. Kimes means a living person who is like a dead person. Where do you have a situation where you have a living person like a dead person? A person who is alive, but whose existence is so miserable that people are praying that the person should die. And we learn from here indirectly there is such a principle, a possibility that a person would indeed pray that somebody should die. Okay, now let's give some other examples of where we find sources that a person is allowed to pray that someone should die. The famous story is the Gemara Masechta Ksubos and Daf Kuf Dalet, where the Gemara tells us about Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rabbeinu HaKadosh would have to enter the Beis HaKisei many, many times. The Gemara there says that his maidservant witnessed that Rabbeinu HaKadosh would have to go to the Beis HaKisei, would have to take off his tefillin, go to the Beis HaKisei, come out of the Beis HaKisei, put on his tefillin. He did this the entire day, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And this caused him enormous grief. It's not clear at all what is the big deal. So why doesn't he just take his tefillin off and keep the tefillin off? Why? What is this terrible tragedy of him going to the Beis HaKisei numerous times during the day? What's so terrible? It's really not clear at all what this is all about. It could very well be that in the exalted spiritual nature of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the tsar of taking off his tefillin was too much to bear. For us, it's no big deal. Okay, we daven, we take off our tefillin, we don't even blink, we don't even think. But a person of Rabbeinu HaKadosh's spiritual status, taking off tefillin because you have to go to the Beis HaKisei is an enormous psychological pain. Let's try to appreciate this. There is nothing more exalted in this world than wearing tefillin. Tefillin represent the Shem Hashem Virokol Am Eretz Ki Shem Hashem Nikro Lecha V'Yom Mecha. When a person wears tefillin, he's bound with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is tied to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person enters the Beis HaKisei, he is experiencing the lowest level of humanity. The experience of a person releasing waste is a statement. It is an experience which reminds a person how lowly and how much of a nothing he is. To go from the exalted status of being connected and bound to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the lowliest state in this world of releasing human waste, which is something that is repulsive, is an extreme journey. It is an extreme journey for the mind. Now we obviously do not appreciate this because we don't feel anything wearing tefillin. But someone on the Madrega of Rabbeinu HaKadosh who does appreciate these things, for him to go from these two states, from the exalted state of wearing tefillin to going to the Beis HaKisei, was a journey that was very painful. And then to come out of the Beis HaKisei to put tefillin back on again, you're going in the opposite direction. To do this the entire day, a person can lose their mind. And the Amsei, the Rebbe, the maid servant of Rebbe, who witnessed Rabbeinu HaKadosh go through the torture of going from one exalted level to the lowest level, saw how much pain it was for him, and she decided that the time has come that she was mispalel, that he should die. The Gemara says, the Kevan, the Chazai, Amsei Rebbe, when the maid servant of Rebbe saw the ol kama zimnin lebeis HaKisei, he entered numerous times to the Beis HaKisei, the anach tefillin, and he put on tefillin, the kumitzta'er, and he had pain, Amar, she said, Yiratzon sheyakoifu elyonim esatachtonim. May it be the will of Hashem that the elyonim, the malachim etram, they should prevail and this and Rebbeinu HaKadosh should die. Okay, so here we see another example where a person was misfalal, or maidson was misfalal, that a person should die. And why? What was so painful for him? It's very difficult, but if you want to say it was a psychological pain that he had of going from one exalted state of spirituality to a lower state, that is a source that a person can be misfalal to die. Now, in Tanakh, we do find two people who prayed to die. Eliyahu Hanavi was mispalel that he should die when he ran away from Izebel, and Yonah was mispalel that he should die. Do we ever find Eov praying that he should die? We do not. I always tell you this to you. Many will make a mistake and they ask the average person which person in Tanakh suffered the most. The average person will tell you the one who suffered the most was Eov. That is not true. The one who suffered the most clearly was Yonah. Yonah was the individual who suffered the most from the Ishaya Tanakh. In fact, the word Yonah itself means to suffer. Yonah comes from the word Oinah. There was no one in Tanakh who suffered more than Yonah. Yonah prayed that he should die. Eov suffered, and he tried to understand the nature of suffering. That's why we dwell upon Eov to understand what exactly is the nature of suffering. But Eov himself was not the person who suffered the most. It was Yonah who suffered the most, but Yonah, and another proof that Yonah suffered more than Eov is that Eov, we do not find anywhere that he actually prayed to die. You don't find that. We find that Yonah prayed to die. Eliyahu prayed to die. In the Gemara, we find who prayed to die? Choni Hamagel. After he woke up after 70 years, he saw that there's nothing for him left in this world. He was mispalel that he should die. Okay, let's go to another example. Another example is, we have the sheet of the Chike Levi. He says something very, halach, something very interesting, that if a person has a relative, this is Nogei Halacha L'maisa, if a person has a relative, a parent, a spouse, a child, anything like along those lines, and they are in a state of enormous suffering, they should not dear pray that they should die. For one very simple reason, you are nogea bedavar, because you are the caretaker. And when a person is the caretaker and sees a relative suffer, you have to really ask yourself, why do you want them to die? Is it because you're really concerned about their suffering, or you feel burdened, overwhelmed with what you have to deal with, and you're really praying that Hashem should release you from your suffering? And the way you're going to do that is by having someone else die. No person is an incredible insight. This is an awesome chiddush. Even though it may indeed be true that there is such a principle in this world that a person can pray to someone else to die, an outsider who has absolutely no negios, he has nothing to gain, nothing to lose, and he sees a person who truly, truly suffers. So, and you make an assessment that this person's suffering is overwhelming, it's overbearing, it's just too much for the victim to suffer, then in Achanami, we do find sources all over Shas that you can pray for someone to die. But if you are a member of the family, if you are a caretaker, you can't pray that the person should die. Because who says you're really praying for the benefit of the person, the chayla? Maybe you're praying for your own benefit because you feel overburdened, overwhelmed by caring for this individual. Who is to say, who can prove that the tefillah is a sincere prayer? It's an incredible insight. Thus, the chikkeleif, paskins, if you're the caretaker, you're a relative, it is usher to pray someone should die. But if you're not the caretaker, you are an objective outside observer, and your assessment teaches you that the suffering is overwhelming, then indeed there is legitimate makar that you can pray for someone to die. Let's go to another example.
Some say, Rabbi Levine, some say, instead of saying die, ask for rachamim.
Right. You're touching upon a very famous story with Rabbi Shmuel Rozovsky. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, at the end of his life, he suffered terrible yisurim, and he told his family that they should be mispalel that he should be released from his yisurim, and that can be fulfilled one of two ways: either the yisurim leave him, or he leaves the yisurim. In other words, he dies. So when a person is such a matziv, don't explicitly demand from Hashem, "Please, I want to die." Say to Hashem, "Hashem, release me from my suffering one way or another. Either the suffering will leave the person, or the person will leave the suffering through dying, exactly what you say, rachamim, rachamim, that's basically the same exact principle. Now, on the other hand, even though we have over here all these different examples of prayer, I'll give you another makar, another source. We have a source in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi tells us of Ada Bar Ahava. He had a son that was a krus shafcha. A krus shafcha means he could not, his testicles were crushed, okay, whatever the exact details, and the pasuk says, Lo Yavai, a krus shafcha is not allowed to marry, is not allowed to get married. And he made an assessment that his son, his child, would suffer enormously in this world in his matzah of being a krus shafcha. He would not be accepted to the Jewish people, and therefore, the Gemara there says that he fasted. Could you imagine such a thing? The parent fasted day after day that his son should die. Not only did he pray that his son should die, he actually fasted that his son should die, realizing his son would have a miserable life in this world, and would end up doing averos, and it was not in his best interest that he should live. Incredible, incredible, these are incredible things. Obviously today we don't do this, we don't take this seriously, but you go to see that there is such a thing in halacha that a life of torture is not a life, especially when the torture can lead to rebel against Hashem and do more averos. Then in certain situations, a person is allowed to be mispalel to die, at least not, but there's no question about it. You're not allowed to do a maisa biyodayim. No one is allowed to pull the plug. In fact, even a person that's suffering enormously, you're allowed, lechatchila, to be mechal Shabbos, to preserve his life as much as possible. Now, on the other hand, we have a principle of no one wants to die because yofe sho'achas, b'seshuva, uv'maisim toivim, b'olam hazeh mikol chayeh ha'olam haba. One moment in this world doing teshuva and maisim tovim is more beneficial, better than all of the satisfaction of chayeh ha'olam haba. And therefore, Chazal said, every moment a person is in this world and he suffers, he feels pain, he feels suffering, it is an atonement, and will bring him in the next world infinite benefit, infinite joy, and therefore a person should not be quick, should not be swift to be mevatah, just to give up on this world, even for those few moments where he feels pain and suffering, because those moments of feeling pain and suffering, it forces a person to reflect what is life all about. There is not a person in this entire world that you can say in these last 3 months didn't have a hearer during the difficult times of Corona, when we were all locked up and the whole world was just crumbling beneath us, did not have a moment where they thought to themselves, what in the world is life all about anyway? What is all of this about? Every single person, it's impossible, had a humiliating moment, a moment of recognition of man's frailty, mortality, how we're here in this world for a purpose, and most of our lives is just make-believe, hocus-pocus. Those moments are gold. At the time when we're going through them, it's horrific, it's painful, it's horrible, it's hard. But in hindsight, when we look back at those moments in life and we look at those moments are really what made us grow. Those moments is what inspired us to cut out the nonsense in our lives and focus on what's important, and grow and become a better person, improve our neshama, so that when we return our neshama to Hashem, it should be of value, there should be a substance in the neshama. So every single moment in this world when we suffer is such a moment. In hindsight, that moment forced our minds to look at the world differently, look at what's important. And just to go be mispalel that a person should die, that a person himself should die because he can't take the suffering, is not necessarily the best thing. Obviously, there's a balance. There's a balance. A person has to use the suffering as a springboard to make his neshama better. But when the suffering reaches a boiling point where there is no benefit, and in fact it leads to rebellion, it leads to averus, it leads to challenge of Kadosh Baruch Hu, then we have numerous Maimari Chazal which tell us that it's not such a bad idea to pray to die. Okay, the Gemara also, you have other examples Yaakov Avinu. I'll give you another example. This is an incredible chiddush. This is an incredible medrash. Never heard this before. Yaakov, until the time of Yaakov Avinu, there was no such thing as getting sick. There was no such principle as a medrash that a person would ever get sick. People would just expire. One day, a person would sneeze, and that's it. He's dead. There was no warning. the person did not prepare to die. So what happened? So Chazal said that what happened was Yaakov Avinu, he made the following assessment. It's an incredible medrash. I never heard this before. His assessment was that people, when they got old, when they reached, let's say, their life expectancy, and they were healthy, and they were vibrant, and they were in their prime because no one ever got sick, they began to realize, you know, I'm 120 years old. If all of my neighbors, my friends, died when they reached this age, they just sneezed and they were gone, I have to expect that that's going to happen to me one of these days, because I'm now 120 years old, and that's what happens. So people began to say, this is not fair. This zelo fair. Why do we die? Who is the one that brought into this world death? And they came to realize it was none other than Adam HaRishon. So every single day, they got up in the morning when they reached a certain age, when they can expect to die, they would say, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Nasan La'Sechvin El'Haf Mayim Vein Laila. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shlo Yesani Goy, Shlo Yesani Yavet, Shlo Yesani Isha. And then they would say, and may our God curse man. May the Ribbono Shel Olam B'Shem L'Malchus, may they curse Adam HaRishon, who is the cause of me dying. I'm healthy, I'm successful, I'm vibrant, I'm in the prime of my life, I have no problems, my blood pressure is perfect, my cholesterol is perfect, everything in life is perfect, I don't have a daiga in this world, there's no such thing as a hospital, everything is perfect. Why do I have to die? There's so much more for me to do. Why am I dying? It's because of that cursed person, Adam HaRishon. He sinned, he ate from the Eitz Hadas, he violated Hashem's words. That's why he brought death into the world. That's why I have to die. So you know what? Before I go, let me let Adam HaRishon know what I think of him. Okay, let Adam HaRishon know that if he was around today, I would defund him. I would take away his pension. I would defund him because he's the one who brought into this world death. That's what happened. Yaakov Avinu said, that's not nice. It's not nice that part of the Birchas HaShachar, old people are cursing Adam HaRishon because they're dying. So Yaakov Avinu was mispallel to Hashem, you should bring into this world sickness. People should get sick and old and tired. And then when they get old, they're going to say, you know, Ribbono Shel Olam, I had it. Do me a favor. Get me out of here. I'm old, I'm weak, I'm feeble, I can't move, I'm vulnerable to the virus, I have to stay locked up, this and that. You know, I had enough already, Hashem. Please, Hashem, take me from this world. Instead of praying, instead of issuing a curse to Adam HaRishon, people would pray to Hashem that they should die. This was the calculation of Yaakov Avinu when he was mispallel to Hashem, that people should get sick. By getting sick, it brings with them pain and old age and a feeling of suffering, which causes them to pray to Hashem that they want to die already and get out of here. And they don't think about Adam HaRishon, who is the cause of their death. Isn't that an incredible medrash? This medrash is just a shocking medrash. That's what Yaakov Avinu was telling to Hashem, that people should get sick and old and become a choyle, should be sick. So what do you incidentally extract from this medrash? You incidentally extract that there is such a principle that a person will pray to Hashem, that's it, my time has come, I'm an unwelcome guest in society, I'm a burden upon people, I don't feel well, I'm in pain, I pray to you, Hashem, I want to leave, I want to expire, I want to leave this world. Another proof that there is such a principle in this world of dying. There's a sach hakol, let me review with you all of the rayos. And then I want to tell you something that's very, very interesting, which I found to be very, very, very disturbing. The last medrash, which you all know anyway, but I just want to make a ha'ara, an observation. Let's just review everything we've learned today regarding this topic. Number one, the basic insight is Hashem gave you a gift of life. If Hashem put you in this world to live, you have the gift of life. It is a terrible avera to pray to die. Okay, someone just went on, someone put you on mute. I don't have a, Mr. Fried, maybe can you go on mute? I can't put you on mute. Can you please go on mute? Because there's someone making noise. So we have over here a principle of life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the gift of life. It is the ultimate gift through life in this world. Is the prozor to Olam Haba. Every single moment, every single second is a blessing, and a person should not take that blessing for granted, and a person should only want to live, and every time a person struggles and suffers, this is just gold. It's a golden nugget which you can use in the next world. You look back, the next world, the Chazal say, and you'll relish those moments of suffering, those moments of humiliation, those moments of feeling humble, because those are the moments which a person connects with reality, and it gives him an infinite boost in Olam Haba. So a person should not be mevater on these moments in life by praying to die. Yofesh ha'achas b'olam hazeh, b'tshuva u'v'maisim tovim mikol nachas shruach shalchai olam haba. However, it does come to a point where a person suffers to such a degree where he's not gaining any teshuva maisim tovim. It's just pure suffering, and in fact, the suffering can lead to him rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, challenging HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then in Hanami, we find numerous ma'amori chazal where people pray that either they should die or their relative should die. We find Yonah praying to die, Elio praying to die, Choni Amagel praying to die. We find the Gemara tells us that Rav Adi Bar Rahava had a child who was a Ptua Daka. His testicles were crushed, and that caused him different complications in life. And he prayed, and not only did he pray, he fasted that his child should die. We find the Amosei de Rebbe, who prayed that Rebbe was suffering mental anguish by going from one madrega of wearing tefillin to the lowest madrega of this world, of going into the Beis HaKisei, a place where you're not even allowed to be maharer in Divrei Torah. To go from one extreme to another 20 times a day was extremely a painful journey for the mind of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, which caused him enormous grief, and she was mispala that he should die. So many examples of Chazal, of people praying that someone else should die. We have the Chiddush of the Chikei Lev that says, although this may be true, you should never pray for a relative that they should die, because you're Nogeya Bedavar. You're the caretaker. Therefore, the burden of their care falls upon you. Who says that your prayer is sincere? Your prayer is for yourself. You're just praying that someone should die for your own benefit. That's an act of wickedness. So a relative should never, ever, ever pray about another relative. A caretaker should never pray about someone should die. The only time where this has an application is when you're not a relative, where it's no difference to you. You have absolutely nothing to gain, nothing to lose. If you know firsthand the suffering is so intense, so great, and there's no benefit to the person, especially Chazal say when a person is not in their right mind. A person, we don't even know, the truth is we really don't even know, we don't even know what it means not to be in the right mind. The people who have Alzheimer's, dementia, we think they're totally gone. Who says they're totally gone? We don't know what they're going through. No one really knows the truth. But if a person can make an assessment that the person is not bedas, then maybe in a chanami, there is such a principle a person should die. We learned about the incredible chiddush of Yaakov Avinu, where Yaakov was misspelled, there should be choyle in this world, because no one should leave this world cursing Adam HaRishon. Instead, they should be praying that they should die because they can't deal with the suffering. We discussed Shmuel Rozovsky, when he was old, he was misspelled that the Yisurim should leave him. How should the Yisurim leave him? One way or another. Either the Yisurim should leave him, or he should lead the Yisurim. Okay, and what else did we discuss before I wind down with one last observation? Oh, there's another very beautiful thing from the Rav and the Mishnayis. The Rav and Mishnayis says, the Mishnah, Perkei Avos, Al Karchach Ato Chai, V'Al Karchach Ato Meis. So the Rav, the Holy Rav in the Mishnah, says an awesome chiddush. What does it mean, Al Karchach Ato Chai? He says, Pa'amim, there are times when a person suffers, he lives a miserable, miserable life, but he has no choice, he has to live. He's not allowed to take his life or even pray that he should die. From the Rav, he seems to indicate, not like everything that we learned until now, a person should not give up his life. Al Karchach Ato Chai, the connotation of the words Al Karchach Ato Chai is teaching us, even in situations where you would much prefer to leave this world, much prefer, because of the suffering is way too intense. Doesn't matter, Al Karchach, you have no choice, you have to remain alive. That is your mission in life. Doesn't matter, Al Karchach Ato Chai, no matter what the matzav is, you're not allowed to pull the plug or even to be mispalel that a person should die. Another thing I left out, very, very important, is the Sefer Chassidim. We have to maybe one day get back to Sefer Chassidim, and he says a very, very important yesod. He says that when a person is a goises, you should never pray that he should die. The principle of praying, the permission that Chazal give man to pray that he should die, is only when he's suffering, not the very last moments. When a person reaches the state of being a goises, which means he only has a few moments left to live, he has only a half an hour, only has a whatever, it's not so clear how you can define the goises. But when the person is at those last hours of life, where it's touch and go, at any moment he can die, even if at those moments of time he is in a state of suffering, that's not a time when you, the observer or relative, should pray that he should die. even though it may be true, we may have many, many proofs that a person is allowed himself to pray to Hashem, I want to die, or to pray that someone else should die. But when a person reaches the very last moments of life, when he's a goyses, when now it's actually happening, that is not a time to pray to die. That's the moment of Yitzias Neshama. The entire minutes, the hours, the day, whatever it is, the 2 days, when a person is a goyses, that is not a time to reflect upon a person's tsar. That is a time of acceptance. It's a time to participate in the Yitzias Neshama of the person and focusing on the suffering and praying to get it over with is wrong. It is not a Torah Hashkafa. Yitzias Neshama is a few moments. That's when you back off. No praying a person should die. A lot of chidushim. These are incredible chidushim in the sugya of dying. Another thing that I left out, that a person being mevakeh chole, it's a very important thing to go visit the sick. And Chazal says, it's a ferish gemara. Why is it a good thing to go visit the sick? Because when you'll visit the sick, you'll know if you should pray that he should live or to pray that he should die. Isn't that incredible chidush? That the reason why you should go to the hospital to see what's going on is to know that maybe you should pray that they should die. If you don't go to the hospital, so the people there are losing the benefit that no one's going to pull the plug. There are people there in the hospital that are in enormous pain and agony, and they very much want to get out of here. They want to leave. They are terminal, and they're not in the matzav where this is any benefit for them for teshuva ma'isim tovim, and it would be to their benefit to die. If someone would come and visit and would witness firsthand what's going on, they would have the benefit that they would go back home to shul or back to their home, into their bunker, and they would pray, Ribbono Shel Olam, please let these people die. And that would be a benefit to the people who are sick. Some people, they would benefit that they should pray, they should live. But there are some people who would benefit from a tefillah of dying. So that's why it's important to mevakeh chole. It's a shocking gemara, pesach l'nedarim, shocking thing to say such thing, that it's kedai to go to mevakeh chole to see what the matzav is. And if a person sees the matzav is terminal and the person is suffering incredible yisurim and it's not of any benefit to this person from what we can tell that he's going to gain any teshuvah ma'isim tovim from this, so then the benefit of visiting him is that now you'll go back home, you'll pray that he should die. Halavai, that should never happen. You should go back home and pray that he should live. It should be a situation with his potential to live. But another proof, another feather in our hat to prove this principle that there are times when a person can indeed pray to die. However, you should be aware that many of the places may shy away from this. Even though everything I've told you now are sources, this is from just a collection from Rabbi Dvorkis in one of his svarim, which he collects all these things together, but yet in the Paiskim, in Shulchan Aruch, and the Nisei Kalim, you don't find from Paiskim telling you a psak halacha, yes, pray to die. Pray for the dead, and the dead will pray for you, only because they have nothing else to do. You ever hear that nursery rhyme? We used to sing when we were children, we go to sleep. Pray for the dead and the dead. So you don't find any Paiskim telling you explicitly that psak halacha to pray to die. These are outside the framework of piske halacha. These are mamari chazal, and we have a dime a dozen of them. Solid proof that there is such a principle where you can pray for a person to die. Obviously, you have to be very, very delicate, like the chikei leif and yafesha achas. But it's not yet. It's the poiskim did not want to actually articulate or put into writing this as a psak halacha. It's a general principle, nothing more than that. Okay, well, I think we've covered quite a bit of ideas. And like Miriam, again, to review, Altino Kemes, Moshe said, let Miriam not be like a child who comes out of his mother's womb, who is deformed, is crippled, will have a miserable, miserable, bitter life. And what do people do? They pray that the child should die ASAP, because otherwise the child will suffer. So he said, Hashem, Miriam is a cripple. She's Hasaras. Al Nati Lo Kames. Let her not be like a person that people pray to die. Let her be like a person that people want her to live. Let her not be like a person that people pray that she should die. Some of the Mori Chazal teach us this principle. Now let me conclude with something which is very famous, but yet in light of the backdrop of coronavirus, takes on a whole new meaning. This is a very scary time. There's a famous Yalkut Shemayni. I'm sure you've all heard at one point in time, there was a woman. A woman who was very, very old. I don't know how old, but she was way beyond normal life expectancy. And she came to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. Some say Yossi Bar Chalifta, how you pronounce his name. She came to him and she said, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, she said to him, Zokanti Yosser Midai, I'm too old. And she said to him some interesting words. And she says, my life, chayim shel nivul heim, my life is detestable. And she said, why? Why is it detestable? I have a symptom. The symptom is I don't taste food. Okay, I don't have any taste in my food. I don't taste any food. And that is why my life is detestable. I don't enjoy the taste of food. So he said to her, tell me, is there anything that you, well, tell me your daily, your Seder Hayom. And she said to him, I go to shul every day. I'm from the Asara Rishonim. A woman, you hear? Rav Meir, this is a woman, she never missed a minyan. Never missed a minyan, never ever. Never, the Gemara doesn't tell us the story about a man. I wonder why not. How come the Gemara doesn't tell us the story about a man? But a woman, she never ever missed a daf. She never missed a minyan. She came early to shul every single day, so he told her, just don't come to shul. So she listened to him. She stopped coming to shul for 3 days, and she was dead. So this Gemara is usually coming to illustrate the koyach of davening in shul. A person is mashkim, mad. The Gemara actually goes forward. The Gemara actually goes right. The Gemara there, it says, from here you learn, Ashrei shoykeit al dalsoisai tamid. Fortunate is the person that is diligent to come to the Beis HaKnesses every single day. I once read an article which made an observation that Shamoshim in the Batei Kinosios, they have Arichas Yomim. Okay, today we don't really have today too many Shamoshim anymore. But the olden days, there used to be a Shamosh. Every shul had a sexton or a reverend, whatever you want to call them, a Shamosh. And the Shamoshim, if you would go and you would make a scientific analysis of take all of the Batei Kinosios in pre-war Europe who had real shamoshim, the shtetlach had real shamoshim, and you would study them, their age, what they died, and study the life expectancy of the congregants of the synagogue and the community, you were to discover someone once supposedly, I don't know if this is true or not, did such a study, and you would discover that the shamoshim all had unusual arichas yamim. Okay, Young Israel of Flapush. Anyone here from Young Israel of Flapush? Remember there was a shamash. I forgot his name already. There was a reverend. He was called a reverend. I forgot his name. He also was like 100 years old when he died. Okay, in the Young Israel of Avenue J, I remember Mr. Stein. He was a shamash there for so many years. He died, Mr. Stein. He died, this before your time, Mr. Gross. He died also had arichas yamim, and then we had the Russian fellow. I forgot what was his name. The Russian fellow. He was no youngster when he passed away. Shamoshim, they come every morning early to davening and they zecht arichas yamim. So he told this woman, "You come early. That's why you're alive. Stop coming to shul." After 3 days, she stopped coming to shul. Now I have absolutely no idea what this means, but it touched a chord in my heart. And I'm the last person to tell you we have any understanding of what is going on today with Corona, with the riots, anti-Semitism. Every day there's a new story. I have no idea, and it is arrogant beyond belief to think that we have any understanding of what is going on. And all these the divrei chizik we hear from the Rabbanim are just to mechazik us and doing things any way we should be doing. Don't connect the dots. Connecting the dots is osir, osir, osir. I always tell you, Rashi, no one knew more than Rashi. No one wrote more than Rashi. Rashi lived through the First Crusade, and Rashi never, ever, in all of his writings, said why the First Crusade happened. He did not write on his blog, the First Crusade happened because of the internet. He did not say the First Crusade happened because of Tznius. He did not say it happened because everyone is talking during davening. The First Crusade happened because people have smartphones in shul. He didn't say any of this. He could have if he wanted to. He didn't. Nothing. So therefore, learn from Rashi. Don't open your mouth and say anything. Why? No one knows nothing. But yet, nevertheless, you don't have to shy away from making observations. Observations. Look at this Maimon Chazal. This woman says to her Rabbi Yosef Rechalafta, I don't taste food. The number one symptom of coronavirus is you don't taste food. Isn't that true? That's a very open symptom. No taste and no smell. There's no time in food. And what did he tell her? The thing that has suffered the most beyond a shadow of a doubt in our religious life, beyond any shadow of a doubt, is tefillah in the Beis HaKnesses. Learning? We have Zoom. I told you many times, Matan Torah was given via Zoom. Has Miponav Kol Aretz. Can everyone please mute yourself? Torah we still have. Torah is going strong during coronavirus. But what don't we have? We don't have the social activity in the Beis HaKnesses. So this medrash, I have no idea what this medrash means, but it's very disturbing. It's very disturbing, this medrash. A woman comes and says, I have a symptom that life is nivel. Life is disgusting. It's a disgusting life I live. Why is it a disgusting life? Because the food, I can't taste the food. Not tasting the food is synonymous with life. Life is a minuval. We're living a disgusting life. And what was the solution? The solution was, don't go to shul. What? We've been experiencing just that. Coronavirus comes with not being able to taste food. And then what was the result? The result was, no Beis HaKnesses. What does all of this mean? I have no idea. But the Gemara's maskana is, what do we learn from this? We learn from this the chashivos of coming to daven the Beis HaKnesses every single day early. Ashrei shoyked al dal soysai yoim yoim. Fortunate, praiseworthy, those people who come every single day early in the morning to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be machshev, the chashivos of life, the chashivos of davening early, like a mensch, properly, b'hashkama, is equivalent to the chashivos, is the beauty of life, brings what life is all about. So even though this one thing has nothing to do with the other, but I'm trying to follow in a very safe, traditional way, is anyway we're supposed to be nizer in chizuk, in tefillah b'tzibur, davening, and this medrash has nothing to do with anything, but at least it's just an observation to remind us to be doing things that we should be doing anyway, now that the shuls are slowly and cautiously beginning to open up. So we have an opportunity once again, and it's our duty to be machshiv davening and to come early. Probably the most important thing about davening, forget about talking during davening, and looking at you texting during davening, and this during davening. Everything really flows, I believe personally, from coming late to davening. I personally believe that if a person comes early to davening, the statistics are he does not talk during davening. He does not play with his phone during davening. If you made the effort to come early, somehow that changes your mindset. Memela, all of the symptoms go away. Like I told you many times, these symptoms, these things that they're talking about, don't talk during davening, don't do this, don't do that, all these rules. This is it's very nice, it's very good, but it takes away. What are you doing over here? These are symptoms. Don't treat the symptoms, treat the disease. Do you know how you treat the disease of what's wrong with davening? There's one pill that does it all. Come early. If you come early to davening, 5 minutes, and just sit there and look at the walls, do absolutely nothing, you have treated the disease. And all of the symptoms of talking during davening and not respecting davening and not paying attention and this, go on and on and on, all the problems that go on in shul, the Kiddush Club. Let me ask you, what are the statistics? The people who go to the Kiddush Club and in the process insult the rabbi by not coming to his drasha and make a commotion and all of the Kiddush Club comes along. Look at these people. I guarantee you, every one of these people, they come late to davening. The people who come early to davening are not the people who go to the Kiddush Club. So the solution to treat the disease is just come early. Coming early has an effect on you. It has an effect. I'm sitting here 5 minutes early. I'm bored. I'm waiting for davening to start. It just has an effect on your attitude towards davening, which changes all of the problems and the symptoms begin to melt away. That is what he told this woman. What do you do every day? She said, I come early to daven. She didn't just come. The words of the Gemara are, her words are, okay, I don't have the words here. I didn't bring with me the Sefer. She comes, she's mashkim. She comes very early to davening. And that's how the Gemara concludes. And certainly when it comes to Corona, it's like a lightning bolt. I don't taste anything. I don't taste. Life stinks. A lot of people have that attitude with life. Life is not the way it's supposed to be. There's something wrong. There's just something wrong about life in our society. And this Corona comes with the simen, I don't taste anything. Life has no time. And the solution is, the solution lies in davening. Davening needs chizuk. Hashem took away our davening, and now Hashem is giving back our davening, and this demands from us we make a very big change. Okay, we'll take a very short break, and then I want to discuss with you the menorah. Okay, the menorah, this week's parasha. In fact, I want to put up on the screen a picture, an image of the Arch of Titus, and discuss with you the different features of the menorah in light of viewing the Arch of Titus.